Opinions expressed on the following program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Absolute Broadcasting, its staff, or advertisers.
This is Crosswinds with Carl Zahn on 1590 WSMN. You think you've heard it all week long? Well, you haven't heard what Carl has to say. Carl Zahn brings all his experience in business and in entertainment to discussing the news of the day that affects us all in southern New Hampshire. And his aviation experience helps him keep his cool when the controversy heats up and things get turbulent. So fasten your seatbelt, put your tray in the upright and locked position, and get ready to join the conversation. 1590 WSMN presents Crosswinds with Carl Zahn.
Good afternoon, New Hampshire. Welcome back to Crosswinds with Carl Zahn at 1590 WSMN, Nashua's News and Talk. I'm Carl, she's Allie, dressed in purple today. Hi, Allie.
Hello.
Happy birthday to your sister.
Happy birthday.
Okay. Hey, all kinds of stuff to talk about, and we're expecting a call from Congressman Thaddeus McCotter, presidential candidate. And those who listen regularly may remember that the congressman was in studio with us just a few short weeks ago to talk about the problems facing this country and his presidential run. While I'm on that subject, Congressman McCotter will be back in New Hampshire next weekend, and in part of that visit, we'll be holding an open house for him in Milford Saturday, August 6th, at the Community House on Union Street from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. So come on down, have some cheese and crackers, and speak to the congressman himself and ask him the questions that are on your mind. Naturally, if and when he calls in today, one of the first things we're going to be talking about is the debt ceiling fiasco that is continuing in Washington. Just 2 days away, August 2nd, Tuesday, is the deadline for raising the debt limit ceiling, and all kinds of different scenarios being forecast about what happens if the two sides don't come to an agreement by then. So it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds. And in New Hampshire, 11-year-old Selena Cass of Stewartston, New Hampshire, still missing after 3 days. Search parties have been dispatched up there, as you can well imagine. And the community is making every effort possible to find out what happened to this young girl who was last seen around 9 o'clock, Thursday night in her parents' apartment, last time she was seen, and reported missing the next day. So that community on edge, as you can well imagine, and pretty shook up. So we'll get back to that New Hampshire news and also some news about the governor, Governor Lynch, coming to a deal with three major unions in the state, and that will forego the need for some massive layoffs that were anticipated, and yet they were able to come together and come up with the $50 million savings that was required by the state budget. And so there you go. On a smaller state level, we were able to work it out. Everyone is happy. Layoffs were averted. Savings were realized. And there you go. Joining us on the phone now, my friend, I might add, and the man, as you know, that I am endorsing and supporting for his presidential run, and we're hoping to help him set New Hampshire on fire up here, so to speak. Now, I don't mean that in a literal sense, of course, although I understand Congressman McCotter did have some, you know, childhood dreams of pyromania. Am I close there?
No, Carl, but it's your show.
I'm confusing you with somebody else. Hey, T-Mac, how you doing?
Well, we're getting towards the deadline. You're seeing the outline, Carl, of a potential agreement between the Congress and the President on the debt ceiling. A lot of details remain to be hammered out, however, and you have to keep a close eye on them.
So your feeling, Congressman, at this point is that they're going to come to an agreement before the deadline?
Yes, I think they will. The question is, what's in it?
Well, yeah, the question, I think the problem has been what's in it as we move along here. And by the way, I saw your, there's a YouTube missive of a little speech that you gave a few days ago in the White House telling the Tea Party members to grow up and the Republicans to wake up. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there.
They need each other, Carl. And what we start to see is that for the Tea Party, what they have to have are achievable objectives. And what the Republican Party has to do is work with them instead of hoping that they would go away, which many in the establishment do. And the concern that I have as we watch the debate on the debt ceiling go forward is that when you see the conservative movement divided and the left united, that leads to electoral defeat and everything we all share in common becomes endangered. So to me, it was something that had to be said. And I think that most people understand that when you live in a situation where somebody like McCain has the temerity to call all Tea Party members hobbits, or you see people in the Tea Party calling Colonel Allen West, of all people, a rhino, it's time to start getting along again.
Well, I have to say, I really appreciated the vigor in your little speech there. And as you know, when you were in here, I volunteered for Senator McCain when he ran for president, and I liked the guy, I admire him, but I have to say I was really disappointed by that comment he made, although, it was that kind of McCain's outspoken that also endeared me to him. But yeah, I thought that remark was very divisive and the last thing that we need right now.
Right, and we've seen historically already within the life of the relatively young Tea Party movement, you've seen where a Tea Party candidate will get nominated and the establishment will walk away. You've seen where a Republican can get nominated and the Tea Party will walk away. And we know what happens in those instances. People like Harry Reid stay. It's far better to continue to engage each other in a constructive fashion to move forward than it is to have purges which divide the party, because as I said in my speech, you cannot unite America if you divide the movement.
Well, I agree with you, and Congressman, my instinct is, I admired these Tea Party people who were saying, look, we were sent here with a mandate from our constituents not to raise the debt ceiling, and we're going to stand by that come hell or high water. So there is a part of me that appreciates that and thinks, yeah, sure, this is what the country needs. But moreover, like you said, what we need is a win in 2012, and it's just not the time for that kind of a power play. We'll lose.
Well, I think they've been, I think they've been very constructive within the process of having principal positions to continue moving in the right direction. The concern is that when you disagree with somebody in a present single vote is when you start to demonize and try to purge. That is unhelpful in the long run. So I think that in terms of the product that comes out, whether or not acceptable to individuals, it's certainly better than it would have been because of the Tea Party's engagement. But the concern is that on the political basis is that you do not want a Pyrrhic victory out of this, because it would not be good for a principle of conservatism in the United States.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I was speaking with Congressman Thaddeus McCotter of Michigan. He's announced his run for president of the United States in early July. I want to mention quickly, and we'll touch upon it again, that Congressman will be back in the state of New Hampshire next weekend. McCotter2012.com to check out the schedule. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, we'll be hosting an open house for Congressman McCotter in Milford at the Community House. And I look forward to seeing you again. There's been all kinds of forecasts, Congressman, about what would happen, the level of disaster if some agreement is not reached on Tuesday. Myth or fact?
I think, Carl, the biggest thing that we have to focus on is, we know from watching, the United States' ability in the world as a security power has been diminished under this administration. We need to look no further than the president trying to impose 1967's borders on our dear ally Israel to see that our credibility gets hurt. We do not want our financial credibility hurt. To date, that has not happened because markets understand that we are a free people with a republic and a democratic process in place, and that we are going to hash this out. Now, the concern that I have, obviously, would be that I think both sides are right. Damage to the fiscal reputation of the United States, financial integrity, would be diminished for the first time in history. And that's why I think there's a lot of confusion. The other aspect of it is August 2nd is the deadline for that, but they're also, I don't think the government would completely shut down. You would still have revenues coming in. You could prioritize, but in the end, that would run out as well. So I think that operating on the August 2nd deadline has been a prudent way to go. But again, we have to see what product comes out of these negotiations.
How do you feel about, my feeling is that part of whatever agreement is reached here, and knowing and accepting the fact that despite the wishes of some or maybe many Americans that we need to deal with this in a really brisk and abrupt fashion at this juncture, I know that we can't. This is just something that we're going to have to take a step at a time to get the national debt down and get the economy back. But don't you think that part of this agreement should be some kind of mandate? The balanced budget amendment, I like that idea. I just think that's a long haul. It's going to be, you know, ratified by 50 states. But shouldn't there be something in writing that says, you know, yes, we have to continue to deal with this on an ongoing basis and in a serious way, and look at entitlements and look at government waste, look at government spending in an aggressive fashion?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. As we've talked about, we have to fundamentally restructure government for the 21st century. We're operating under an outdated big government welfare state model from Lyndon Johnson. But the question then becomes, what can we do in the short term? Because as you know, unfortunately, from a Republican point of view, from a conservative point of view, the elections of 2010 rendered a divided verdict.
Yeah.
But a split decision here, where you still have Harry Reid running the Senate, and now you have John Boehner running the House. And so it's what can be done until hopefully the full verdict is rendered in 2012.
Yeah, I agree with you there. How are you fixed for time? You got a couple more minutes?
Well, I can go till 12:20, and then I got to get back to the continuing crisis.
Okay, well, then let's just finish up the last couple of minutes here and talk about your visit to New Hampshire and how do you like it up here, how you're being received. What's the vibe?
Well, I wish I could get up there more, and I wish I could have gone to Smart Girls Politics in St. Louis, and I wish I could have done my economic speech in Iowa. But as one of the presidential candidates, there's three of us that will actually be voting on these matters. I think the public understands that we have to do our job here for the country and actually take action rather than go running around giving speeches. So I think at this point in time, I wish I could be there more, and we're going to be there more as the August recess comes. Because I like New Hampshire. I'm very respectful of the process. The people have been very kind to give me an airing of my views when I've been there. And it's the same as with Iowa. I think it's a wonderful combination to have a caucus system in Iowa and then to have an open primary system in New Hampshire, because it tests the ability of the candidates across the board to see who we can make our standard bearer. But I do love New Hampshire. And I don't just say that because, remember, I'm not pandering to you, because I'm an admitted Lions fan who will never change his mind.
Okay, no, I know you already signed the anti-pandering contract with me anyways. I want my listeners to know that there'll be no pandering allowed or accepted from Congressman McCotter.
Or could you say, Carl, that I've pandered to the anti-pandering crowd?
That would be a mouthful, my friend. And I'm not even going to attempt it. How many panders can a panderer pick if a panderer could pick panders? It's Congressman Thaddeus McCotter.
The pander bear, yeah.
The pander bear. We're looking forward to seeing you next Saturday, my friend. And believe me, New Hampshire is ready to have you back whenever you're ready, and we'll take you as often as you can be here.
Well, thank you, Carl. It's very kind.
Hey, thanks. We'll see you next Saturday.
All right, man. Bye.
Have a good day. Congressman Thaddeus McCotter, there you go. That's my guy, folks, and you can see why. Well-spoken, smart, reasoned. Like I said, he's got this little missive that he gave just a day or two ago in Congress, and I liked the spunk and vigor that was in his tone. It's exactly what I want to see in a president. It's Crosswinds, 1590 WSMN, Carl Zahn, and more right around the corner.
Folks, this is Tom O'Brien. Join me right here on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk, Monday through Friday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. I will take your calls as we talk commodities, currencies, and equities. If you want to take control of your financial future, you want to know how price and volume move markets. Don't let Wall Street eat you alive. Stay tuned right here every day for the Tom O'Brien Show from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk.
America had just gone to war when Felipe Adams volunteered.
I took a bullet to the side and left me paralyzed.
For Armando de la Rosa, the Navy was a chance to serve and see the world.
I got medically discharged in 2001.
For injured veterans like Felipe Adams, there are veterans like Armando de la Rosa ready to help.
Our training is to better the veteran.
Paralyzed Veterans of America, changing lives, building futures. Visit pva.org.
I'm Helen Krebel with the Vernon K. Krebel Foundation. Illegal immigration is one of today's most divisive issues. But if we put aside the political posturing, there is a simple answer. It's called the Red Card Solution. a free market approach that can secure our borders and provide the workers that our recovering economy will need legally. It does that by linking specific workers to specific jobs, running background checks, and providing smart cards for identification. This provides a safe and legal way for workers to get jobs and for small businesses to get workers. Even more importantly, it gives us a way to control our borders by eliminating most illegal entry. It also gives people already here illegally an incentive to leave and come back legally, giving them a simple path, not to citizenship, but to legal status as temporary workers. To find out more, log on to redcardsolution.com.
Play ball!
Now pitching, Dave Black.
Dave is about to catch his opponent off guard. Not with his nasty fastball, no. Instead of a fastball, Dave will be hurling a tomato.
And the pitch.
Ooh. Using tomatoes as baseballs won't go over well with anyone. But if you're looking to hit the ball further and throw better, eating a healthy diet that includes fruits and vegetables is a home run. Packed with nutrients, they could help keep your body healthy and strong, giving you the energy you need to hit that grand slam. When you look at it this way, eating tomatoes is playing hardball against the competition. Run, throw, think, eat better. Can your food do that? Find out at smallstep.gov.
That's smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You're receiving Downtown Nashua's other free wireless service. No computer required. We're 1590 WSMN.
The host of Red Eye on Fox News. You're listening to Crosswinds with Carl Zahn, who's basically a jerk.
I'm a jerk, huh, Greg? Well, maybe you can tell me that to my face next Friday when I will be back on Fox News' Red Eye with Greg Gutfeld. Taping next Friday night airs Saturday, August 6th at 3 a.m. for you night owls, or for those of you with a digital video recorder, a DVR, I suppose you can... You can tape it or do something like that. At any rate, my fourth visit to Greg Gutfeld and the boys down there in New York next Friday. What else? KimCatesFund.org are coming up on August 14th, Sunday, August 14th at the Alpine Grove. I will be hosting a day-long event from 1 o'clock in the afternoon to 8 o'clock at night. Two stages, music bands for adults and a kids stage with kids shows going on, food, all kinds of stuff like that. A great family day, all put together by David Cates, Kim's husband of Mont Vernon, and some close friends of his to support the Kim Cates Fund. And this is a nonprofit set up by David and some friends, which will award cash scholarships to promising medical students in the area who want to further their career in medicine in remembrance of his wife, Kim, who was killed in that Mount Vernon home invasion. She was a dedicated nurse, worked down here in Nashua at St. Joe's for years, and this is David's way of remembering her in a kind way. So please check that out. You can learn more about that at my website, Carl, K-A-R-L, from NH.com. Just click on Stand Up Comedy Appearances. There's a poster there. Tells you all about the event, and we hope that local folks will come out and support this cause. David Cates will be there along with his wonderful daughter, Jamie, who survived that attack against all odds and came out of it a straight-A student and a bubbly, happy little kid. Geez, I just can't say enough about these people, about this guy and his daughter. But anyways, come out August 14th and support that cause. And if you can't, drop a check in the mail, KimCatesFund.org. $5, $10, $2, whatever you can do. You'll feel good, and it will continue to overwhelm David as he has been overwhelmed by the response to this from the community in the New England area. So check that out. Congressman Thaddeo Mercado, once again with us. I love this guy. He's got a great sense of humor. He's smart as a whip. Congressman since 2002 from southeastern Michigan, still lives in the little town of Livonia with his wife and kids, his hometown. So I like him. He's a grounded dude. He's an awesome electric guitar player. I've checked him out on YouTube. He's got a little band and plays a killer axe. T-Mac does. So I am very interested to see how he does up here in New Hampshire. As you said earlier, he wants to get up here more. I appreciate the fact that he's one of these guys who does his job first in Congress and puts campaigning on the back burner, especially when it's required in a situation like this. But he will be back in state next weekend. Check out that deal at the Community House in Milford Saturday, August 6th from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock, a little meet and greet. Come down and meet the guy, see what you think about him. I'm interested to see if people are as impressed as I am. A lot of people are kind of giving me some grief for supporting a guy on the outside, and as people see as, you know, how could he possibly have a chance? I think he's got a great chance because it's early in the game. New Hampshire, I think, as they learn more about this guy, hear him speak, learn about his background, see the legislation that he's created and supported. He's been a very, very active member in Congress. He's not one of these guys who's down there with his putting green in the corner of his office all day practicing his stroke. This guy has been on his game. I've researched him. He's done a few things that the Republican Party didn't like, and one of them he reversed his, after giving it more thought and analyzing it deeper, reversed his position on it. You know, but I like the guy. He's an independent thinker, and he's very smart. He's reasoned. If you go to his website at McCotter2012.com, you can see all the stuff yourself, the legislation that he's been behind and stuff that he has supported, legislation he's written. So I like that. I like someone that goes there and actually does something. You know, a lot of these people, they go there, they're there for term after term after term, and at the end of the day, at the end of their run, you look and you go, well, what did you do while you were here? I don't see any legislation with your name on it. I don't see any bills passed that were sponsored or authored by you. You know, what were you doing here all this time? So I like this cat. He's a lawyer, had his own practice in Michigan, so a smart guy, and down there getting some stuff done. Back to New Hampshire, 11-year-old Selena Cass still missing. My producer, Allie, tells me that as of this morning, they are offering a cash reward for information, I imagine, leading to the arrest of whoever is involved. As I was reading in yesterday's paper about this, you know, Stewartston's way up north, pretty close to the Canadian border, Colebrook, quiet town of like 12 or 1,400 people. And one of the residents was saying how this has just rocked the community there. You know, this is clearly a small town where everybody knows everybody. And she was pointing out that there were no kids outside. People were kind of staying inside. So people are shook up, rightfully so, and with no leads in this case and no idea what's going on. They don't have any reason to believe or indicate that she's a runaway. I guess police and FBI teams are at the home and have been for the last several days looking at her cell phone records, computer records, stuff like that. I could proffer an opinion as far as how this is going to turn out, and I won't do that at this time because it's just too heartbreaking. But I think if you use your imagination and you look at the news and look at the world we live in, you can probably put two and two together and get a pretty good idea of what transpired here. I certainly hope that's not the case. I hope they find her alive and well. Nothing would be happier than that. I'll tell you, as a father of a 5.5-year-old daughter and 4 boys and having kids and grandkids, every time this happens, I just realize what the worst nightmare for any parent is, losing a child, and worse so in these kinds of circumstances. This goes back to that Casey Anthony case in Florida where, you know, it's just such BS that she waited 31 days to report her child missing. Anyone from that family down there, you might want to pick up a New Hampshire paper today to see how it's supposed to be done when you're a parent. You know, the girl was last seen at 9 o'clock the night before she disappeared, and the next morning, the very moment the parents realized that she was missing, they call the police. All right. So for anybody out there doesn't grasp that concept, there's how it's supposed to be done. You know, who waits when your child is missing? Who waits? It's the first thing you do. You panic, you look around, and I'm on the phone within half an hour. I don't know where my kids are. Also, any New Hampshire residents that are in that area or anybody who might be, you know, predisposed to go help out. I think they're assembling search parties, and from what I can gather, they're looking for all the help they can get up there. 603-816-1590. If you got any comments on Congressman McCotter, anything local, any comments at all, 816-1590 and WSMNradio.com to learn more about our programming here at the station. Nashua's news and talk station for over 50 years. Our little AM station down here, our little pony. This Selena casting reminds me of, I'm guessing, 7 or 8, 9 years ago when a young kid from Massachusetts went missing up north behind in Loon, behind the condos at Loon. And, you know, my wife and I had just been up north, as we usually do every fall, with our two boys who were then probably, like, you know, 9 and 10. And a kid about that same age went missing, family from Massachusetts that vacationed up there at Loon regularly and had a condo there at Loon Mountain. And this little kid, Brian McCarthy, I think I recall his name was, went missing. And we had just left the North Country on the day that he went missing. And 2 days later, they were still looking for him. And I drove back up. I took a day off from work and drove back up to join a search party up there. And you know, it was moving and heartbreaking at the same time. I mean, there were well over 1,000 people gathered at the bottom of Loon Mountain, and the state police and fish and game trying to organize search parties and dispatch people in school buses to certain areas and mark off the areas that you've searched. And at the same time, you know, the parents are there just brokenhearted, waiting, waiting. And as it turned out, they finally found the kid about a day and a half after the day I was there, and he had succumbed to exposure. They found him in the woods up there. He had climbed up and up and up this mountain, lost. And what a heartbreaker. And I know in the years that ensued, the parents had implied that New Hampshire State Police had bungled the investigation and they thought there was foul play involved. And I know, in fact, just a couple months ago, I read an article where they had investigated that claim and come to the conclusion that there was no foul play, no indication of foul play. The kid was lost. And, I wrote that off to brokenhearted parents looking for an answer for something that there's just no answer to. But I remember just being so brokenhearted over this kid. And because my kids were around the same age and we'd been hiking and doing all that stuff up there, and you know, you can lose a kid in the blink of an eye. I mean, you don't have to be a bad parent to do it, especially up there in the woods. I mean, boy, you can lose a kid in no time at all. And after that event, I spoke to my boys about what to do if you're lost in the woods and what not to do. And, one thing not to do is climb up, you know, find a river, find something, a brook or something like that, follow it downstream. One thing, you get lost in the mountains, the one thing you don't want to be doing is going up. That just gets to where the weather's worse and has a much less likely chance of leading to any civilization or any place that's going to yield you some help. But a young kid that age and his parents had said, sadly, that he was terrified of the dark. So you can only imagine what this poor kid went through in 3 or 4 nights alone out there in the woods of northern New Hampshire. Heartbreaking stuff. That's why, as you know, I'm an advocate for children's safety and all that stuff. When we don't do all we can to protect our kids, and when we seem to increasingly as a culture hold our children in lower and lower esteem in terms of what we endure and what we accept on the internet, in terms of child abuse, child pornography, and I continue to be baffled why, as a culture, we feel that under the guise of free speech, that we have to accept everything and anything. People seem to think the only exception to that is yelling fire in a crowded theater. And I've tried to explain to people many times that that's a rhetorical example. It doesn't mean that the only exception to free speech is literally yelling fire in a crowded theater. It's an example. And free speech and limitations on free speech. You can't use speech to incite violence, to incite danger, to do stuff like yelling fire in a crowded theater where people might get hurt and crushed and stuff like that. So I don't know why we protect, under the guise of free speech, the First Amendment, all these things that are so harmful to kids. And as I pointed out, and, you know, look, I'm not a psychic, I'm not a clairvoyant, but this thing in Stewartston, Look, dollars to donuts, it leads to some guy, some pervert on the internet that she had some relationship with, or back and forth email, and finally talked her into meeting. You know, who knows? And could be, you know, I could very well be wrong. But I'll tell you what, that goes on all the time. We allow it, and our kids are vulnerable to it. Even smart kids from good homes are vulnerable to it. How many times have you heard that story? I don't think you could call me a nut for coming to the conclusion that that may well be how this turns out. You can call me a nut for other reasons, but track record-wise, statistically, 11-year-old girl goes missing in a small New Hampshire town like that. You know, do the math. How do you think it's going to turn out? And we continue to allow it. As O'Reilly once said, when it comes to child pornography, and I'm off on a tangent here now because of this Selena Cass thing, but and I think O'Reilly, I always remember this because I thought it was such a salient point, that the proliferation of this heinous child pornography on the internet, and all pornography for that matter, adults as well, it you know, because it's so available to people and available in the privacy of your home, you don't have to go through the public embarrassment anymore of going to a video store and walking out of the famous back room like some kind of half-human, half-lizard, half-reptile creature. And I think a lot of that public part of it kept a lot of people from maybe, you know, engaging a proclivity. So as O'Reilly said, this takes what might be a proclivity in some people and turns it into an obsession. You know, when you're one mouse click away from any, you know, watching anything you can imagine on the face of the earth, and you get more and more and more people doing that, there's a problem. Child pornography, I think, is like a $30 billion a year industry in this country. Pornography itself, I believe, is in the hundreds of billion. I think $300 billion rings a bell. I mean, here's a country in, you know, deep recession, the economy is all screwed up, people are losing their homes, but somehow there's still $300 billion out there floating around that people have to spend on this absolute cultural poison, as far as I'm concerned. You know, we're all human. We all have desires and stuff like that. But I mean, geez, a little self-discipline, and in the absence of that self-discipline, and in the absence of society, the good people in society being willing to ostracize or call people out on it, then it just flourishes like a bad algae in a muddy pond, you know, and that's what's happening here. You watch this thing up in northern New Hampshire. Like I said, I could be wrong. I'll be the first one. I'll be happy to admit I'm wrong if they find this girl safe and sound and it turns out to be something where she's at, you know, a neighbor's house or went off with a friend and didn't know her parents were looking, you know. But by all accounts, she doesn't seem to be that kind of kid, doesn't seem to be that kind of home. I'll just bet you that there's a sad ending to this and that somewhere the internet and an adult is involved. It's Crosswinds with Carl Zahn, 1590 WSMN, 603-816-1590, if you've got any comments on that. We also talked about Governor Lynch coming to a deal with three major unions in the state of New Hampshire, and this is a good deal. This is why I like Governor Lynch, even though he's a Democrat. I'm willing to overlook that. I voted for him for all his terms. Crosswinds, Carl Zahn, more straight ahead.
Hello, this is Mike Bonacorsi. Are you ready for retirement? Listen to my show Tuesdays, 12 to 1 on 1590 WSMN, Nashua's News and Talk, where we discuss the financial and non-financial issues of retirement. Because remember, there's more to retirement planning than your 401k. So tune in to 1590 WSMN, Nashua's News and Talk, every Tuesday from 12 to 1 to get ready for retirement.
What do your status updates say? What if every ounce of your being helped update the status of a person, and in turn they did the same for you? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. Get interactive at peacecorps.gov/game.
Mom? Dad?
What is it, honey?
Well, you know that Melissa's transferring, and she's been telling me all about this amazing school. It's a charter school, and can I go there?
Slow down, Katie.
We've been through this. Private schools are just too...
But Mom, it's...
Fact. All charter schools are public schools.
And Melissa told me that kids really...
Katie, we just don't have the money to send you to...
Fact. Charter schools are tuition-free.
And Melissa said that the kids in this school are really motivated...
Fact. Charter schools are boosting student achievement.
So can I enroll, please?
The National Alliance for Public Charter Schools wants you to know the facts about charter schools. 1.6 million students attend nearly 5,000 charter schools and receive a free, quality public education.
Well, sounds great to me.
Honey, we'll start the enrollment process today.
Already started it, Mom, but I could use some help.
For more information, visit the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools. Visit www.publiccharters.org. That's publiccharters.org. And get the facts.
Thanks for supporting the local businesses you hear advertised and highlighted every day on 1590 WSMN.
Hi, Bill O'Reilly here, and you are listening to Crosswinds with Carl Zahn on 1590 WSMN, Nashua's News and Talk.
Nashua's News and Talk, and there's the man himself, Bill O'Reilly. Thanks for that, Lina. O'Reilly, the O'Reilly Factor on Fox News. Sometimes things in life happen so perfectly that you just never recreate the moment. And as we went to break, after my rant about all the cultural poison and pornography, I remarked to Allie that the studio TV seemed to be on some kind of boob channel. All I was seeing was bras and boobs and mannequins and more boobs. And sure enough, we checked it out. And the name of the show is Perfect Boobs. You can't see the TV. And yeah, by the way, Allie wanted me to point out that she can't see the TV, which is true. Her back is to it. But as I'm doing the show, I'm usually watching what is hopefully a news channel. But I was noticing that all I was seeing was boobs and boobs and more boobs and bigger boobs. And sure enough, we went to change the channel, and the name of the show is Perfect Boobs. Welcome to America, ladies and gentlemen. Where half of us are worried about the debt ceiling and the economy and the future of the country, and the other half of us are worried about perkier boobs. Oh. McCotter2012.com. Check out the website of the good Congressman Thaddeus McCotter. We're talking about Governor Lynch having struck a deal with three major unions here in the state of New Hampshire. They managed to come to concessions that included and met the requirement of Governor Lynch's budget that they come up with $50 million in savings on these three contracts, and they were able to do that. Signed, sealed, and delivered, and layoffs were averted. So they said Governor Lynch is very pleased. I guess the union officials are as happy as they're ever going to be. And, you know, that's the kind of negotiating back and forth, striking a deal where the state gets what the state needs because the state needs budget savings. And I appreciate Lynch taking at least somewhat of a hard line against it and saying, look, we have to come up with that number. We have to come up with that number. And if we don't, then it's layoffs. On the darker side of that coin, or actually a different coin, other layoffs are now worrying Nashua officials as the hospitals and the FAA here in town are about to announce some major staff reductions. And this has the city worried that, you know, this area and Nashua in particular is going to come to, you know, another kind of a double whammy in this recession. The Federal Aviation Administration has a facility right down here on Route 3, and they got another one over on just off Exit 11, a Tracon over there. So there are a lot of FAA employees in this area. And with the hospitals announcing staff reductions, you wonder what that's all about. Now, I think most of us, including myself, think of hospitals as being somewhat recession-proof, I guess, for lack of a better word. I mean, people are always getting sick. It doesn't change. There's accidents and all the stuff that keeps hospitals in business doesn't seem to, you know, people don't get less sick because the economy's not good. Or they don't not have that car accident or break their leg or whatever. So that gets me to wondering, how are hospitals suffering in this economy? Because a lot of their money comes from insurance companies. I suppose other parts of it come from people who just walk in and pay. Other people have to make some kind of payment agreement. And I suppose a certain amount of people who never pay. But it just seems like that equation of income for hospitals doesn't really fluctuate with the economy. So what's going on with the hospitals that they're laying off people? That's kind of unsettling in and of itself, and especially as Obamacare comes into play, where we're adding millions more people to the roles of insured. And that would seem to me that's just going to put more stress on our hospitals and that they would need more people. But what the heck do I know? I'm just a stand-up comedian, basically, and a guy who, you know, likes to watch boobs on TV. So I don't know how much I really know. Carl, K-A-R-L from NH.com. If you want to check out my website and schedule of stand-up comedy appearances, I'll be back on Fox News' Red Eye next Friday. Tapes next Friday, air Saturday, August 6th at 3 a.m. And I also want to talk about the event coming up at Alpine Grove, August 14th in Hollis, 1 o'clock in the afternoon to 8 o'clock at night to support the Kim Cates Fund, this nonprofit scholarship set up by her husband, David, to remember his wife, and it's a great, great way to do it. Talked about that on the show here a little bit before, how I just like the idea of this medical scholarship because it goes on and on and on from generation to generation to generation. Undoubtedly, some young doctor will get to become a doctor because of money available from this fund who might not otherwise have been able to do that. And who knows how many lives he or she goes on to save and influence and what those saved lives go on to do from there. So it's a the medical scholarship is a really unique way of remembering somebody in terms of the way that it kind of fans out like that. Think of a rock in a lake and the ripple effect, and that's how this scholarship fund is going to work. So it's just a great idea and a great way to do it. The government is complaining about disastrous weather and the effect that it's having on the economy. They're saying that this year is, in 2011, the United States is set right now to break an all-time record in terms of funds needed to repair damage from extreme storms. And you notice that extreme storms getting to be kind of a buzzword for, or just, you know, you hear it more and more because we have all this weird extreme weather, including just a couple months ago, the tornado in western Massachusetts that did so much damage out there. And how many times have we had tornadoes in this area? I've talked about this on the show before. It's just really strange. I grew up here, and I don't ever remember of hearing a tornado, maybe an occasional hurricane warning, but even that was rare. Of course, we had the big hurricane back in 1939, I believe, that was devastating to this area. But by and large, you don't hear of hurricane warnings, and you certainly don't hear of tornado warnings. And now they're almost becoming just a little bit shy of commonplace. I know we had some weather last week, and they issued another tornado warning for western Massachusetts. Or I think it was Worcester County, actually, this most recent one. Worcester up there in a hill always seems to get the brunt of heavy snowstorms and wild weather. But it's becoming more and more common. And, of course, earlier in the spring, they had those super huge, devastating storms out in the Midwest and in the South that just were off the chart. I mean, there were people experienced in weather observation and the storm chasers and all those guys, and they'd never seen anything like these tornadoes that just leveled huge, huge swaths of area. And it cost the government huge money to do these, disaster relief things, and they're becoming more and more commonplace. So there's just another burden on our economy that makes you wonder what's going to happen. We were talking earlier in the program, we kicked off before Congressman McCarter came on about the debt ceiling thing. And I have to say, before we close the show, that watching the two sides of this, is there anyone beyond me that's just so disappointed as an American at how our elected leaders in congregate are handling this issue? On one hand, you've got the Obama administration, which has had almost 2 years now to present their own budget, In fact, had they done it before the elections, the midterms of 2010, when the Democrats had the House and the Senate, they could have voted in anything they wanted. They owned both houses. He could have raised the debt ceiling then and passed all the spending that he wanted from here to Mars and back, and there would have been no one to oppose it because they owned the whole show. But I'm telling you, this is more indication that this president has an aversion to leadership. And I've talked about it, you know, umpteen times on this show, that in his brief tenure as a senator, he mostly voted present. And I don't even know why they have a present button in the House. I mean, if you can't vote yes or no, up or down on an issue, then there's no need for you to be present. Well, why even be there if you can't have a position on something? It's so aggravating to me. And I guess, you know, in the spirit of generosity, I can see where, all right, maybe out of every 50 votes, there's one or two where you go, well, you know, I really can't come down on either side of this. I'm just going to vote that I'm here. I'm here today. I was here the day they voted on that. I just didn't take a position. And Obama had a 90% record of voting present. You know, he doesn't like taking a firm stance on anything. I mean, short of health care, which is the crown jewel of the Democratic Party, he had to do that. He had to take that one full bore down the court and stuff it and do a rim shot on that one. But everything else, he doesn't like to take a position. He's been lambasting Republicans and the Tea Party for their budget plans, the Boehner plan, the McConnell plan, the Ryan plan. Bad, bad, bad. But here's Obama himself, the president, who hasn't brought a plan since day one. They don't have one. What is your plan? Show it on paper. I mean, the Republicans, at least, Ryan, McConnell, Boehner, these other people, came out with these detailed plans. Tons of work and thought and consideration and how can we do this? And, you know, we got to share the pain. It's going to be painful. All that stuff. I think the country gets it at this point. It's going to be painful. I've got breaking news for you down there in Washington. It's been painful for the last 3 years here. We get it. Yeah, every middle-class person I know of is struggling to keep afloat, to pay their bills and keep their house warm and cool in the summer, keep food on the table, pay your light bill, it's just nuts. And then you hear these idiots telling us that, you know, we're going to have to share the pain. Hey, I got news for you. I'm still waiting for you guys to feel your first pain, and then we'll talk about sharing, okay? And is it any wonder that the vast majority of the American public says no way? And my initial instinct on the debt ceiling is also to say no way. Listen, come to me when you've stopped spending the $3 million to study monkeys on blow and $6 million to study how shrimp reproduce. And you know, the legions of these kinds, and those are actual examples, by the way. I'm a comedian, so I feel like I have to add that caveat. Those weren't jokes. Those are actual government programs. And any politician will tell you, well, that's $3 or $4 million. That's not going to make a difference in a $14 trillion debt. Well, maybe the $3 million doesn't, but the $3 million times the 500,000 programs like that across the country, then it starts to make a difference. And you know what? Even if there was only one of those $3 million programs, the right thing to do, the demure thing to do, is to cut it. Get rid of it. I'm so freaking tired of politicians telling me that doesn't make a difference. That's not going to help. That's a drop in the bucket. Well, you know what? I don't care if it's a drop in the bucket or not. Get rid of it. When the government finally stops spending our hard-earned money like they were monkeys on blow, then you can come to me and ask for more tax money from me. Then you can come to me and tell me about pain and shared pain. But until that ends, I don't want to hear about it. And I'm telling you, I think that's how most of the country feels. And as I told Congressman Moncada, these Tea Party people who went there, I've got to admire that. I know that they can't do it. I know they've got to compromise. I know we're going to raise the debt ceiling and all that. But I admire the fact that those people went there and said, look, we were sent here with a mandate from the people who voted for us that this has to stop and stop now. And we're not here to compromise or make deals or bargain and do anything like that. We're here to put a stop to it. And sadly, like most people with that attitude, you get to Washington and you find out nothing works that way. Washington can't do anything quickly or aggressively or overnight. I don't know why. I don't know why this has to take months and months and months to figure out what's going on with this debt and how we're going to reel it in. But that's the way that things move in Washington at a snail's pace. They make a snail look like a rabbit in Washington, the way they move. And so they'll plod along. We'll get some kind of compromise deal, watered down deal. It'll save a few billion bucks, and neither side will be happy with it. And it'll go on and on and on. Makes me wonder if term limits aren't the answer, because everyone's playing politics with this thing. Most of the people down there are thinking about 2012 and getting reelected, not about what's best for the country or what's best for the average American. Term limits would fix that problem. You could go there once, make some radical decisions, actually have a principle and stand up to it, and not be fettered or have your decision-making tainted by your own political ambitions. I think it's time for term limits. I think it's also time, whatever this deal is that they come up with on the debt ceiling, that it better roll with some pretty hard choices by the federal government as far as entitlements, paying for college education for illegal immigrants, paying for health care for illegal immigrants, all these stupid programs that they spend money on, the turtle tunnel down in Florida for $30 million where they built a tunnel under a highway so turtles could cross it without getting crushed by the cars, going, listen, for $30 million, I'll spend the next 20 years down there carrying turtles across the highway. How about that for $30 million? And they wonder why the average American is about ready to have the top of their head pop off at the thought of any more government spending and them raising the debt ceiling. Really? Really? We're the ones that are crazy? Are you kidding me? Do something right once, on budget, on time, and then maybe I'll believe you when you tell me that they're going to fix everything down there and that this is a new beginning. I don't think it's a new beginning. I think it's a beginning of the end. The debt ceiling? Forget it. How about the doubt ceiling? Okay, I'm working on raising my doubt ceiling, because the more I hear about these numbers and how screwed up this country is, I doubt that we can ever get out of debt. It's Crosswinds with Carl Zahn, 1590 WSMN. We'll see you next Sunday. Have a great afternoon. It's a glorious day out there. See you next week.